This is episode 115 of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast, talking about nursing home admissions and arbitration agreements with special guest Elizabeth Newman. The Nursing Home Abuse Podcast is dedicated to providing news and information for families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. Here are your hosts, Georgia attorneys Rob Schenck and Will Smith. Welcome to this episode. My name is Rob Schenck.
And I am Will Smith. Toodle bang.
Toodle bang. We are your hosts of this podcast. We're going to be talking about, this is going to be a casual conversation about nursing home admissions and nursing home arbitration agreements with a special guest today, Elizabeth Newman. Will, can you tell us a little bit about Elizabeth Newman?
Absolutely. We are delighted to have her on. She has been the senior editor of McKnight's Long-Term Care News, which is a publication that caters to the healthcare industry. Since March of 2011, she was previously the editorial manager at LifeBridge Health in Baltimore, and before that, she was a reporter for the Capital Gazette newspaper in Annapolis. She is a graduate of Northwestern University's Medill School of Journalism, and in her spare time, she reads, writes, and travels. Although she is originally from Virginia, she now lives in Chicago with her husband, 9-month-old baby, and 4 cats.
And Elizabeth, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. Happy to be here.
Fantastic. Well, in our introduction to you, Elizabeth, we mentioned that you are the senior editor of McKnight's, but I think that a lot of the audience might not know what, or maybe some of the audience, I don't want to say a lot of the audience, but some of the audience might not know what McKnight's is. So can you give us a background of McKnight's, what it is, and who the audience of McKnight's is?
Absolutely. So McKnight's Long-Term Care News covers the nursing home industry, specifically focused on skilled nursing. We also have a sister magazine, McKnight's Senior Living, which covers assisted living. So primarily what I work on is related to your traditional nursing homes and news around that. And, kind of the issues around arbitration agreements today will mostly be focused on your traditional nursing homes. But we're a B2B publication for nursing home professionals.
And you say B2B, that means business to business.
Business to business.
So McKnight's is covering things from the an industry perspective that deal with the industry. So, for example, like such and such a nursing home company has been sued by the AG of whatever state, or these two companies are merging, or things like that.
Absolutely. A variety. We do quite a bit of legal news, policy news, but also a little bit of research. Obviously, our readers are very interested in the latest in dementia care and other types of best practices around some of those clinical issues for people in nursing homes.
And there are a lot of issues, and we've brought this up before in other podcasts, that the nursing home industry faces. There's a lot of problems that they face. It's not an easy industry a lot of times. And we'll hopefully get into a couple of the problems that they're having and that they're facing and the solutions they're coming up with. One of the issues that's kind of a hot button topic right now are arbitration agreements. So, right. What is your understanding of what arbitration agreements are?
Absolutely. So, of course, arbitration agreements aren't specific to nursing homes. In any business, there can be a written agreement that says if a dispute arises, the parties have an agreement to avoid court and have a disinterested third party make a decision. And while consumer advocates may disagree with some of the issues for kind of the ins and outs of it, they are meant to be less formal, less time consuming, less expensive, and they're meant to be private. And, for many small businesses, which nursing homes may be a part of, that they would feel that the arbitration agreements are necessary to protect themselves.
And just to remind people who are listening to this, arbitration agreements are consensual agreements where a consumer is getting a product. It could be like you said, it's not just nursing homes. Anytime that you sign up for cell phone service, if you're riding on a cruise ship, it's a wide range of different practices and products that you can get, where you say to the producer or the whoever it is that you're purchasing something from, even if it's just skilled nursing, in an agreement for you allowing me to use this product, and me buying it from you, I promise that if there is a dispute in the future, we'll have an arbitrator listen to it rather than going through the long process of a jury trial.
Absolutely. And you raised a really good point there, what I believe, which is consent, right? Mm-hmm. That a lot of times you're talking about employees agreeing to work for a certain business or an agreement about a certain product, perhaps. And one of the issues that comes up quite a bit in nursing homes is, did the person or parties understand what they were signing?
Right.
And we can get into that a little bit more. But in a general sense, you would assume that an arbitration agreement is between two parties who understand that they are agreeing to stay out of court.
And how common is it for these arbitration agreements to be in these nursing home admission packages? Is it relatively new?
That is a great question, and no one really knows the answer. Certainly, if you talk to some people, they'll say, oh gosh, in our state, everyone uses them. They're part of your admissions packet when you enter any sort of senior care facilities. The problem, when I say that no one really knows, and of course, as journalists, we'd love to have some hard data. Most of the data would be based on a small sample. There's a huge amount of variance from state to state. And as I said, these are private. There's not great data on how often the agreements are set up or how often arbitration proceedings would occur, because believe it or not, no one on either side is eager to call up a journalist to say, you know, here's what we're fighting about in relationship to our, you know, our unhappiness with the nursing home.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so, just from a broad standpoint for our audience, where does the nursing home industry, the people that are operating nursing homes, where do they come down on arbitration agreements? Are they in favor of it or not in favor of it?
Right. So that's a very complicated question. And I kind of want to get into some of the ins and outs of the controversy about these
sure.
nursing homes, which is that back in 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services attempted to ban these arbitration clauses in nursing home agreements. This is part of what we call the big final rule, and said, you know, if you're a nursing home that participates in Medicare or Medicaid, which almost all nursing homes would be, you cannot have pre-dispute binding arbitration agreements in for nursing home residents or their representative. So the American Healthcare Association, which is one of the big industry groups that we cover, said, we object to that ban, and they filed a lawsuit to enjoin CMS from enforcing it. This was 2 years ago, then Trump won. And in 2017, you have a new administration that wants to get rid of a lot of these regulations. And at that point, in June 2017, CMS said, oh, never mind. So that went away, and then you could use arbitration agreements again. That said, CMS, as part of that, I think it's kind of a nod towards consumers, said any arbitration you're using now needs to be in plain language. It needs, if it's a condition of admission, it has to be in plain writing, and the agreement must be explained, and the resident has to acknowledge that he or she understands that. So to get to your point about nursing homes, you know, there's a feeling that they should be able to use them if that's what works for them. Mm-hmm. I also want to note the other industry group has said that Leading Age has said they consistently support arbitration agreements that are fair and balanced and are not a requirement of admission, and has some kind of what they call common sense recommendations of, you know, it should be included in agreements separate from admissions. It should include a period of time where you could reconsider and cancel the agreement, and that it shouldn't limit a resident rights or remedies under the law other than to specify the forum and the proceedings for dispute resolution. So that's kind of a long answer to your question, but basically these are the industry recognizes that these are controversial, but feel that they are oftentimes needed.
And so I guess that would beg the question is why from the industry standpoint would they be needed?
But why are they needed?
Correct.
So that's a great question. And I think what it comes down to, and I don't want to speak for the nursing home industry, but nursing homes providers often feel as if they have an unfairly deserved poor reputation, that mm-hmm. they are delivering good quality of care, but that families may not understand how sick their loved one is, or have a real fear of nursing homes. And even for the best nursing home in the world, there is oftentimes for family a lot of feelings of guilt of placing their loved one in a nursing home. So you're kind of coming in with the sense of, okay, you know, what if people don't trust us? And there is some fear that as people enter a nursing home and perhaps are towards the end of their life and deteriorate, that there may be things that happen that are just part of the end stage of life, and that a long-lost nephew or someone is going to show up and say, oh, you know, why does Great Aunt Betty have dementia and sue, right? Mm-hmm. So they feel that these are necessary in order to protect themselves from a lawsuit that would potentially bankrupt them as a small business.
Right. Because arbitration is, and we should explain in case we haven't, arbitration is generally touted as being less expensive and faster and therefore less expensive than traditional litigation, which can go on for a year or more, involve
a lot of attorney's fees.
A lot of attorney's fees, depositions, and things like that.
Absolutely. That's a part of it. And I also do think, I mean, it would be unfair not to acknowledge that these are often very emotional cases. Any sort of medical neglect, malpractice cases are often very, very loaded. So I think there's a fear that in front of a jury or in a public court setting that emotion may win out over what we could call the, you know, kind of medical facts of the case, and that nursing homes could not, you know, are kind of the deck is stacked against them in a jury proceeding.
Right. So
that's how they feel. I'm not saying that I necessarily agree with that, but that's some of the
logic. Oh, no. I mean, it's understood.
Yeah. There's two sides of every.
We're on the other side of the coin. But no, I totally get where you're coming from and understand. Yeah.
And another question that we have, and sometimes our clients ask this, is that in your understanding, in your experience, do facilities that have arbitration agreements versus facilities that don't require them, is there a general tendency for the care to be different?
Not in our reporting or our knowledge. I think that now I will say that oftentimes the cases that we cover are obviously, you know, things that have been appealed. Essentially, the cases we cover are cases where there has been some sort of neglect. And so then they want to avoid the arbitration agreement, and so they're taking that to court. But I would make a pretty strong argument that you would not assume that using an arbitration agreement would in any way impede the quality of care. If for no other reason than the vast majority of people working in nursing homes are dedicated to your loved one and want to do a good job, and or if they're not, an arbitration agreement doesn't impact how they're treating that person.
Right.
Yeah.
In your reporting, have you found, there's people throw statistics out there, you know, you don't ever know where they come from, but it's our understanding on this side of the aisle that the studies show that arbitration awards tend to be far less than jury verdicts.
Yeah. Yes, I would agree with that. And as I mentioned before, I mean, certainly for nursing homes, one thing that listeners may not recognize is that nursing homes do have pretty thin, small margins, mm-hmm. Because they're based on reimbursement from the federal and state government. That's a very different story for perhaps senior living, assisted living, independent living. So nursing homes often feel if there was, you know, a $1 million verdict against them in a jury trial, that they would have to shut their doors.
Yeah.
Right. You know, this is kind of, I mean, on topic but off topic. But as we record this, it's not when this is published, which will be in April.
Oh, yeah.
But recently, in the last couple of weeks, as we are recording this, Jay-Z is in the process of arbitrating a matter. And he's actually now trying to get out of that matter based on the fact that the arbitration panel that was there, the company, I'm not quite sure which one it is, lacks diversity. And as a result of that, I think, and I read, and I should have brought this with me, but they came out with a new policy of diversity that they make sure that their arbitration panels have enough people of color and women.
I thought
fascinating. I had not heard that. That is a fascinating point to make of when you're talking about why arbitration agreements work in kind of a philosophical context. You would assume that the arbiter is completely neutral on all sides, but who is making those disinterested judgments. And that's a great point.
Yeah, and in Jay-Z's motion to dismiss, or response to the motion to dismiss to compel arbitration, that's he said it's not a jury of my peers, it's not an arbitration panel of my peers.
Interesting.
Yeah, and all arbitration is, for anybody who's still confused about it, Judge Judy, Judge Joe Brown, all of those daytime judge shows are arbitration. Judge Wapner, People's Court. You've agreed to binding arbitration. They've just got it set up like a courtroom, but it's arbitration.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So one thing I did want to kind of, since we talked about the cases that do go to court when they're fighting about arbitration agreements, is that in our reporting, I would say that it comes down to a difference between what the person couldn't understand in relationship to the agreement versus what they did not understand. So a lot of the fear around specifically nursing home residents signing it is that they may be cognitively impaired, that they may be visually impaired, and that the font isn't too big, or that they did not have the capacity to understand what they were signing. Versus in one recent case we wrote about, the daughter of the resident signed it, and the judge essentially said, your failure to read and understand does not exempt you from its terms. So I do think that it's important to kind of understand that difference of what the person couldn't understand versus what they didn't understand in the agreement.
Well, I think that that's an excellent point. So there's kind of two things in that. Number one is absolutely the cognition and the capacity to understand is important when there's the resident is the one that is signing. So obviously, if you lack capacity, you can't sign it. With regard to somebody that does have capacity, that is a family member, the issue in that instance, the first issue, the threshold issue, is not whether that family member understands it. It's whether that family member has the authority under the law to make the decision.
So, oh, absolutely.
Yes.
That is a case we've written about quite a bit recently for both publications, is whether the representative holding the power of attorney was bound by the arbitration agreement that they signed on behalf of the resident. This case was recently of the wife and the daughter of two nursing home residents separately sued the nursing home provider after the person died. They claimed substandard care. And I think that the real takeaway there is, you know, who has the valid power of attorney?
Yeah, and it was interesting because at the time that the American Healthcare Association sought the injunction against Sylvia Burwell and the rest of that administration for CMS, right, there was also it was slightly around the same time, there was an issue in the Kindred nursing home case that also went up to the Supreme Court. Well, actually, let me backtrack. Only that one went to the Supreme Court. CMS, after Trump's administration, dropped the appeal. But right, both of these cases were going on in federal court at the same time. One had to do with seeking an injunction against this final rule, and the other one had to do with powers of attorney on who could be an agent for a nursing home resident.
Yeah, and I think specifically the Kentucky case, the fact that the Supreme Court wouldn't say that a general power of attorney had to specifically say, you know, arbitration is added to the powers of attorney, because they didn't want, it's not right that the Seventh Amendment would be any different than any of the other rights,
the right to
have
own property, right, or exactly, anything else. Yeah. So,
and of course that brings up the question of the Federal Arbitration Act and the high court's kind of decisions on that. That is often a lot of what we cover, is when there are different interpretations of that act, which of course, you know, that's what the Supreme Court is there to do. But that's quite a bit of what we cover, is people appealing and the Supreme Court saying, you know, you didn't interpret the act the right way.
Right.
And I think what it comes down to is that, just based on, I mean, we just gave a talk on this at a conference for Consumer Voice
a few months ago.
And just researching this and looking at the case law and kind of reading the writing on the wall, I think arbitration agreements are going to be here to stay.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they're on firm ground. I don't know. I mean, perhaps another administration might look at a different way to address it. But if it's, you know, it seems like they're on pretty strong footing right now on allowing arbitration. It's just going to come down to what you were talking about earlier, which is what the federal courts will always say, which is certain contract defenses will always apply. So if there's not a meeting of the minds, if somebody isn't cognitively aware or they didn't understand something, if it's not made, if it's not very obvious, then they might have something, some way to defend against it. But I think that they're probably here to stay.
I tend to concur with that. I do think that, you know, as you said, there, the court is often looking at, was there an issue of fraud, in terms of misleading someone into signing this agreement? And if there wasn't, then they've tend to say, look, it's valid. You need to stick with it. Certainly in this era right now, I mean, the administration is very focused on repealing regulations. I would say that our, and the court has, the courts overall, I would say have tend to uphold them, you know, in most cases. You know, I also, quite honestly, don't anticipate this being something that is politically an issue that a lot of people would want to fight for. And you know, you kind of, as a if you're a consumer advocate, you might kind of, you know, at a state level want to say, okay, we need to get rid of these. But it's a very complicated issue. And, you know, you, nursing homes are businesses, and you potentially run afoul of people like the Chamber of Commerce when you say they should go away.
You know, I'll be honest with you. I have noticed, and this is just my perspective, but I have noticed in discussing and researching this and talking with attorneys and journalists and nurses and lawmakers that this is a pretty equal bipartisan issue. And and oddly enough, both sides of the aisle are equally either passionate or ambivalent about this.
Yeah, because you have to understand the issue to have, you have to understand the issue to have a feeling about it, right? And it's, you know, when you say a ban on pre-dispute arbitration agreements in long-term care facilities, I mean, you know, try being me at a party and talking about what you've been writing about that day, right?
It's not something I use when I go to holiday parties to talk to members of the other sex at all. No.
Yeah. I want to say.
And you're absolutely right. And certainly there was a big push from senators a couple of years ago to try to push this through. I think right now there is, you know, even if you take a step back from arbitration agreements, even if you talk about long-term care issues in general, right, there's not a lot of oxygen in the room right now politically of when you talk about Medicaid or Medicare reform, of that there's so many other, you know, you have so many other hot button issues right now that, you know, I anticipate it being a few years before we circle back to what's the future of long-term care.
Yeah. I think that what's interesting, though, is that for a minute in late 2018, when Me Too was flaring up and Stormy Daniels was going on, that was an arbitration case. And so,
yeah, that's
and there,
a great point.
And there was the issue with like non-disclosure agreements and like I think it's either the Senate or the House of Representatives had that thing where if you were any allegation of sexual harassment was always arbitrated and never, it was always non-disclosed. And so people were kind of fighting back against both of those concepts, but that kind of dissolved after that, after those things happened.
Yeah. I just don't think they don't have a lot of staying power because it's like Elizabeth was saying, they don't sound interesting.
Yeah.
You know, like
well, I'm sorry. I was going to say that's a great point about, you know, when you have kind of these cases of involving big political figures or stuff like that, of, you know, they're meant to be private, but certainly as journalists, we always want more transparency. We want there to be records. We want there to be a court proceeding that we can have access to.
Yeah.
So kind of on that level of, you know, are these private deals that kind of go on in back rooms may make some people more uncomfortable than others.
Right. Elizabeth, can you tell us how did you end up becoming the senior editor of McKnights? Like, what was your journey towards that? Or do you have a background in nursing or anything like that?
Oh, so I'm a McGill School of Journalism graduate from Northwestern University. I started as a newspaper reporter at Capital Gazette Newspapers in Maryland, worked there for a number of years, and then I found that my passion was really related to healthcare reporting. So I worked in Baltimore for a number of years, and then in 2011, I accepted the job at McKnights and came out here. I obviously write quite a bit of policy and other type news for both our website and our magazine, but a lot of what I handle is our digital content. and, you know, doing fun things like this.
Excellent. And so if somebody had like a hot scoop, a hot story for you, how would they get a hold of you?
So you are always welcome to email me. My email is elizabeth.newman@mcknights.com. On Twitter, I'm at TigerELN. But certainly, if anyone has a case or a situation where they want to talk to, they want to tip me off or talk to me about something going on at a nursing home, they can reach me there.
Excellent. Elizabeth, this has been, I think, a really good, usually I will say this, I'm going to be honest. We've had episodes about arbitration where just me and Will just, you know, mouthing off about how much we hate it. So we got to get somebody on. We got to talk about with a different perspective and just have the both sides kind of an episode where we just talk about it just without, you know, casting judgment.
Because there's always
absolutely
two sides.
And like I said before, I mean, as a journalist, I'm not going to take a position one way or the other. All I can tell you is kind of why our readers and why nursing homes tend to favor arbitration agreements, why they tend to be controversial, and why consumers and perhaps lawyers do not care for them.
Right. Well, great, Elizabeth. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for inviting me. I hope you all have a great day.
You too.
You too.
All right, take care. Bye.
McKnights.
Yes.
Opposite of McDays.
Right. McKnight Rider. But that was interesting. It's always interesting to have, you know, it's not as though she's diametrically opposed to anything.
She's a journalist. So she's theoretically, she's just reporting. And she happens to be reporting on the side of the industry that supports arbitration agreements.
Yeah. And I mean, I am against them, but at the same time, I'm not so polarized that I can't understand what the other side's perspective is. I mean, as an attorney, my job is to understand what the other side is thinking and what their best arguments are. Not their worst straw man arguments, but their absolute best arguments. And they do have some good arguments.
I myself personally have been against arbitration agreements since I was 21 when I was fired from a place because I refused to sign an arbitration agreement.
And I just recently discovered I already knew this story.
Yes, right. So we won't go into it again.
I just recently discovered that Rob's band, which I have mentioned before, Cab Over Pete, actually had a song called Arbitration.
That's right. So we were like a politically motivated rock band, of course. Late 90s.
Rage Against the Machine.
Rage Against the Machine.
Two guys on drums.
So we had a song that I wrote that was based on the anger that I had about arbitration, how I considered that a violation of my Seventh Amendment rights. And so, which is also why we didn't have a very big audience. Actually, what I'm going to, Gene, can we cue up a little bit of that music? This is going to be awesome. Yeah, it's going to be awesome. Maybe even a picture of a Cab Over Pete from back in the day. So, hey, let's listen. See, this is a good riff. I wrote this riff.
That's very impressive. You're a very talented musician.
Thank you.
You know, it's too bad that it was
the
late 90s. And
no one wanted to hear about arbitration and their rock songs. No one wanted to
hear about arbitration.
Yeah.
No one wants to hear about it now.
I'm 20 years ahead. Whenever we go, next time we talk, we give presentations to people, I'm going to bring this song.
You really need to.
Yeah. And I'm going to have people listen. But anyway, with that slice of Americana, that's going to conclude this particular episode of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. This podcast is available for new episodes are available every Monday morning, either on your favorite podcast app like Pod Puppies, Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or you can watch us at nursinghomeabusepodcast.com or on our YouTube channel. If you do watch on YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe. Actually, like and subscribe on all those methods of consumption. But with that, have a great day, and we will see you next time.
See you next time. Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes are available every Monday on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.